Okay, we're continuing. we're continuing in Yonei Daf Yomi, Maseches Moed Katan. So we'll be speaking about Chol HaMoed. Last week we spoke about the broad strokes from a high level look at whether the malachas on Chol HaMoed are Aser Midoraisa, the forbidden malachas, or whether it's only Aser D'Rabbanan. And then we quoted the Ramban, who made a pshara. He had a compromise position between the two shittas to create a balance, whether or not it's the raisa or the rabbanon. So we're going to continue that. It's interesting because this was someone's idea that we should speak about the daf yomi topics. A few people actually came over to me and said that they want to start doing daf yomi as a result. So it's geschmack even without doing the daf yomi, but it's a little bit of an encouragement to take that on. Okay, so in Maseches Moed Katan, on Daf Yud Amud Beis, so we're not speaking about Malacha per se, we're not speaking about any of the 39 forbidden labors that would be forbidden on Shabbos or Yom Tov and possibly on Chol HaMoed. We're speaking about Prakmatia. So Prakmatia is the Aramaic word, which means business transactions. The Gemara opens with a very strong statement. The Gemara says, Omar Rava, Prakmatia kol shehu aser. So the Gemara makes a powerful statement, almost as if there are no exceptions. Prakmatia kol shehu aser. The slightest amount of business is forbidden. The way the Gemara presents it, it's almost as if there are no exceptions. Prakmatia kol shehu aser. That any sort of business transaction, prakmatia, is forbidden. But then as we go along, the Gemara is going to qualify. And we'll see in the Paiskim that there's a lot to talk about. Omer Rabbi Yosi Bar Oven. So the Gemara tells us in the name of Rabbi Yosi Bar Oven, Ubedover Ha'Ovid Mutter. If the person will incur a loss, then it's permitted. If you recall, last week we discussed, as we mentioned, the malachas that are aser, the forbidden malachas, watering your field, harvesting your field, things that are bona fide malachas that you certainly would not be allowed to do on Shabbos. And even over there, the Gemara told us that a davar avod, as long as you didn't schedule it for Chol HaMoed, usually you're allowed to do it in order to prevent loss. So prakmatia, which is business transactions, would certainly be permitted to avoid a loss. If you can perform malacha, bona fide malacha to avoid a loss, you can certainly perform business transactions prakmatia. So Rabbi Yosi Bar Avin Taka says, ubedavar ha'avod mutter, that if you will incur a loss otherwise, then it would be permissible to engage in transactions in business over Chol HaMoed. And as we go along, we'll try to articulate the parameters of what's considered a davar ha'avod when it comes to prakmatia. Now we have a story, and the poskim tell us that this story is a chizik. It's a bit of encouragement to us that even when it's permissible to engage in prakmatia, the Gemara shows us the blessing, the bracha, that comes for observing Chol HaMoed in the highest form. It's obviously easier said than done. The Gemara tells us, Ravina hava lehahu iska. Ravina once had a transaction, the hava mizdavin b'shita alfi. That should read b'shita alfi, for 6,000. So the Mefarshim explain, it's speaking about a case where Ravina would have been permitted to sell his merchandise for 6,000. Shah, but he delayed. He postponed the sale till after Chol HaMoed. He took the risk. Shoya lizbune basar Chol HaMoed. So he waited, even though it would have been permitted, and it was very tempting to sell his merchandise for $6,000. It must have been very tempting. But he postponed the sale till after Chol HaMoed. And the Gemara tells us, Vizavne betracer alfi. And he managed to sell it for 12,000. So the Mefarshim tell us that this story, this anecdote, is really here to encourage us that even when the letter of the law would permit it, but there's a bracha, there's a blessing waiting those who observe Chol HaMoed in the highest form. We mentioned last week in the name of the Chazon Ish that the Chazon Ish wanted to sanctify Chol HaMoed, and he deliberately took a stringent attitude in order to sanctify the Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara actually tells us a bit of encouragement that even when it's permitted to engage in pragmatia, Ravina, he deferred, he didn't, he postponed it, and as a result, he was blessed to have earned twice as much. Another halacha, Ravina having masik zuze bivnei akra de shanvusa. Ravina was owed money from the people in the city called Akra de Shanvusa, Bnei Akra de Shanvusa, the city of Shanvusa. So he wanted to know if he can collect the money. The most poskim say that this was pragmatia. He was collecting the goods. He already laid out the money before, and he wants to collect the goods. Perhaps it was wine. He was buying wine. It was commerce. Also, coming to Ravashi, he came before Ravashi. Am I allowed to go and pick up the merchandise? I already laid out the money before Chalavai, before Yontif. I laid out the money a month ago, and now the merchandise is ready. Am I allowed to go and collect the merchandise that was prepaid earlier? He was Masik Zizi. He was owed money. It's not just the collection of a debt. Most places can say that you would be allowed to collect your debts. It's not considered transactions. But Ravina here wanted to collect the merchandise that he laid out the money before. So he came before Ravashi. Omar Le, Mau Lamezo Ha'idna Alai. Would I be permitted to go and pick up the merchandise from them today on Chol HaMoed? So Omar Le, so Ravashi gave a ruling to Ravina. Kiven de Ha'idna Hu de Mishkachaslu. Because these people are available now, and they might not be around a different time. Perhaps these were Eino Yehudi. They're around now. They're here now. They're present, but they might not be accessible later. So kipragmatia ha'avadami, this can be compared to a transaction to avoid a loss. So here's an example where Ravina himself he used this heter. This is pragmatia ha'avad. This was not talking about selling something or engaging in business to avoid a loss. This was simply talking about picking up his merchandise. The merchandise arrived. He had prepaid before. It was time to pick up the merchandise or to have the merchandise delivered. He asked, would the collecting of the merchandise be permitted on Chol HaMoed? So it actually seems like under normal circumstances it would have been forbidden. This would be considered following through and finalizing a transaction. But because it's a davar ha'avad, because the merchandise might not be available after Chol HaMoed, the merchants might not be around. Therefore, you're allowed to collect it now. So here's an example of pragmatia ha'avad. We'll give more examples as we go along. Why is it that pragmatia is aser on Chol HaMoed? What's wrong with engaging in transactions on Chol HaMoed? After all, there's no malacha here. You're not doing a malacha. You're not doing any of the labors. It's not any of the 39 malachas. So why would you not be allowed to engage in pragmatia on Chol HaMoed? So I found that there are a few reasons given in the Rishonim. The Rush, in the first parak of Moed Katan, Simon Chaf Gimel writes, because of tircha, because there's exertion. Running a business obviously takes exertion, and tircha is not in the spirit of Chol HaMoed, of Yom Tif. So that's the reason why they prohibited pragmatia. Like we said, pragmatia kol shehu aser, under normal circumstances, it's forbidden to engage in pragmatia. The reason is because pragmatia involves tircha, it involves exertion, and that's not the spirit of Chol HaMoed. We actually saw last week that even under certain times, a tircha would even forbid you from doing a davar ha'avad. So tircha on Chol HaMoed is a big deal. We don't want you to engage in tircha, we want you to enjoy the yantif. That's what the Rush says in the Psakim in the back of the Gemara. The Shailas HaTshuvas HaRush, written by the same author, in his responsa, so this is Klal Chaf Gimel Ois Dalit, he adds something. Besides the tircha component, he also adds something that we could probably all relate to. Because when it comes to buying and selling merchandise, it takes a lot of exertion. Making sure that we precisely assess the value of the merchandise, making sure that we sell it with the proper profit, making sure that our overhead doesn't exceed the profit, that we're within budget. So there's a tremendous tircha. And then look what he says. Umitoich tir dasoi, because you're so busy, yimona mi simchas yomtif. It's going to detract from the simcha. So we all know that having responsibilities at work minimizes the simcha. It's a distraction from our it's a distraction from our frame of mind. And says the Rush, besides the tircha, what's the problem of the tircha? The tircha prevents us from properly enjoying the yomtiv. So this sheds some light. It's not just technicalities about the do's, about the do's and the don'ts, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. The spirit of the halacha, what we're trying to achieve here, is a simchas yomtiv. And if the person would be engaging in pragmatia, the tircha, the exertion, would ultimately take him away from his simchas yomtiv, and he wouldn't enjoy the yomtiv as much. And then the Rush goes on. Sometimes there's inflation, you have to lay out more money than you expected in order to restock the merchandise, and that causes tsar, that causes stress, it causes anxiety. Sometimes a person sells something on Chol HaMoed and he realizes or he has to sell it for less than he expected to, and sometimes he even suffers a loss. So this causes a lot of anxiety. V'ika tzara, and there's a lot of tzar. It causes distress. So because of that, the Chachamim, they encourage us, they prohibit pragmatia altogether because of the anxiety and the stress and the tzar and the distress that comes along with running a business on Chol HaMoed. So we have over here, it's a build-up. This is also the Rush. First, the Rush. In the Psakim, he simply says there's a tircha. He doesn't really give us more than that. In the Kshuva, he expounds on that, that the tircha prevents us from properly enjoying the yomtiv. And not only don't we have the simcha of the yomtiv, but sometimes the disappointments in the workplace, they actually cause us tsar and distress. And that can detract in a big way from the joy that we're supposed to be experiencing over the yomtiv. That's the Rush. The Prisha brings, in the name of the Magid Mishnah, that there's a gzeira that you might come to write, you might come to record. And this is obviously very prevalent. Nowadays, especially, if the person is allowed to engage in pragmatia, so he might come to do forbidden malachas. So I want to just emphasize that the discussion tonight is going to be primarily about actual pragmatia. Nowadays, when we run a business, when we open a store, or we run a business, more often than not, besides the actual buying and selling, there are malachas, writing that comes along with that, recording, other malachas. The Mishnah Berurah talks about running a textile business where you'll be giving the customers pieces of material, so you're cutting the material down to size. That involves the malacha of mechatech, which means cutting something down to size. So very often the pragmatia is associated with the true, real malachas. So we have to differentiate always. Are we discussing pure pragmatia, where it's simply transactions, or are we discussing malachas also? So the Magid Mishnah says that the reason we can't engage in pragmatia is because the pragmatia might lead us to do, it might force us to do forbidden malacha. So we're not discussing malacha here, we're discussing pragmatia. And the reason pragmatia is usher is because of the greater concern that we're going to do malacha on Chol HaMoed, which would not be permitted. So it's important to keep everything in context. The Ravid says the reason is simply because of Uvda Lechol. It's a weekday activity, similar to the Rush, that it detracts from the spirit of the Yom Tov. So we have like a multi-leveled spectrum of reasons why the Chachamim prohibit pragmatia. Number one, starting from the last one, it's simply Uvda Lechol. It's simply a mundane weekday activity. It's not in the spirit of Yom Tov. The next level would probably be because it involves tircha. It involves tircha, and tircha also detracts from the spirit of Yom Tov. And then the Rush expounds on that, that not only is there a tircha, the tircha prevents us from enjoying the Yom Tov because we're busy. And on top of that, the disappointments at work cause us to actually have tsar. It causes us stress, and it causes us anxiety, and that prevents us from having simcha. And then the Magid Mishnah says the reason is that we're afraid that you might come to write, you might come to do forbidden malachas. Like the Mishnah Berurah says, you might come to cut textiles down, you might come to do other malachas that would be forbidden on the Chol HaMoed. So all of these reasons go into why Rava says pragmatia kol shehu is aser. That's the Gemara. If it's a davar ha'avud, if we're going to suffer a loss, like for example, the example in the Gemara, that I'm not going to be able to get the merchandise at all because the merchant is not reliable and he's here now, but he's gone tomorrow. So then you certainly would be allowed to engage in pragmatia because that would override all of the reasons. You can even perform real malacha when there's an issue of davar avad. You're even allowed to water your field on Chol HaMoed if it would involve, or to tend to your trees or to prune your trees if it would involve a real davar avad. So if there's a real davar avad involved, that would clearly override these concerns, and you even would be allowed to perform real malacha. Now, it's very interesting because although the Gemara starts off that pragmatia kol shehu aser, that transactions, even the slightest transaction is forbidden, the Beis Yosef sort of like tells us a secret, that you should know that there are mefarshim, there are poskim, who actually permit pragmatia on Yom Tov, and they explain the Gemara differently. It's fascinating. The Beis Yosef writes like this, and this is item gimel in the notes. Zeloshoinai, this is a quote from the Beis Yosef. Kol schayra asura afilu kol shehu. So he basically paraphrases the Gemara. Any business on Yom Tov, on Chol HaMoed, the slightest amount of buying of transactions of schayra is asur, the slightest amount. So first the Beis Yosef brings the standard conventional approach, which is more or less how we paskin. Kosov harosh, the rush writes, pirish, what is transaction? Liknoi schayra oy lemoichra, to purchase merchandise or to sell merchandise, afilu kol shehu, the slightest amount is asur, mishum tircha, because it involves the tircha, it involves exertion. That was the rush that we quoted earlier. The kenkos of Harambam, the Beis Yosef continues that the Rambam says the same thing. And the Beis Yosef is medayik, and this is the normative halacha. Umashma the loishna bitzina, the loishna bifarhesia asir. That the Gemara doesn't make a distinction about whether you're publicly doing the malata, the mischaira, or you're privately doing the schaira. It's not about farhesia and sina. It's not about maris ayin. It's not about doing something publicly. We simply, pragmatia is inherently asir. Even if you're engaged in pragmatia on your computer, in the privacy of your own office or home, where nobody knows what you're doing, it's still forbidden because it's intrinsically asir to do pragmatia unless it's a davara of it. That's what the Rush says, and that's what the Rambam says. The Beis Yosef is medayik, that it doesn't make a difference if it's sina or farhesia. It doesn't make a difference if it's public or private, because it's not about farhesia. It's not a maris ayin issue or something of that nature. It's inherently asir because of the reasons that we gave before. However, the Beis Yosef continues that there are opinions who disagree. Shaloi k'divri harakeach. This is not the opinion of the rakeach. The rakeach, he actually permits all forms of pragmatia bitzina in the privacy of your own home. Shekosa b'simen shin dalet. The rakeach writes in his sefer in Simen Shin Dalet, chapter 304, demi sheba dvar schera liyadoi. That this is the Rekeach talking. If an opportunity to perform transactions comes to your hand, Lisa Valitain, Bitsina Mutter, you're allowed to perform all transactions, Bitsina, privately, as long as it's not done in full view of the public, as long as it's done privately, it's Mutter. So the Rambam and the Rush disagree. The Rambam and the Rush say that transactions are inherently forbidden. But the Rekeach, says the Beis Yosef, permits it. If it's done privately, it's not just the rakeach. The ogur, another rishon, also permits pragmatia bitzina. This is a quote from the ogur. Now, this is all written in the Beis Yosef. Rabbeinu Nosson Heshiv. Rabbeinu Nosson used to respond, mi shebaschara liyadoi. Anybody who has the opportunity to do business on Chol HaMoed, lisa v'lite. As long as you're within the privacy of your own home on Chol HaMoed, he's doing some sort of business, people are coming in the back door and you're selling them things, it's mutter, or you're purchasing. Why? Why would it be mutter bitzina? She'afilu b'shabbos iser kalhu. Because transactions are not biblically forbidden. It's not aser d'oraisa. Even on Shabbos and on Yom Tov, when everybody would agree that you can't perform transactions. Everybody knows that you can't buy and sell. Mekach u'memkar is asur on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Everybody knows that. But it's an iser kal. It's only a relatively light iser. It's a relatively minor prohibition, says the Ogur. It's only an iser d'rabbanan. So when it comes to Chol HaMoed, says the Ogur, Hilgoch Bitzinah Mutter, therefore, privately, you're allowed to engage in pragmatia on Chol HaMoed. This is the opinion of the Rekeach and the Ogur. It's not the conventional opinion. The Beis Yosef was medayik that the Rosh and the Rambam disagree. They would prohibit pragmatia, even Bitzinah, because they consider pragmatia to be inherently aser. But the Ogur and the Rekeach, they permit pragmatia Bitzinah. Bekenkos of Baal HaYoreim, and the Re'im, Rebbe Eliezer Mimitz, also permits pragmatia Bitzinah. And this is a quote now from the Yoreim. Dafke Bishuk, Di'ika Torah. It's only Tircha, it only has exertion if you're in the marketplace. But if you're doing a transaction on your computer in your office, you're sitting in your swivel chair and you're leaning back in your leather swivel chair and you're punching in and you're ordering and you're buying and selling, you're conducting business over the computer, you're running an Amazon or something, that doesn't involve any tircha. It's only in the shuk that there's tircha. Avo babayas, but at home, if you're somehow operating a store from your home, near the mutter, it would be mutter, and that's the Mordechai, Ad Kan L'Shoyne. So it's a fascinating machlokes that although the Rosh and the Rambam prohibit pragmatia, even Bitzinah, as we said the reasons that we quoted above, because it's inherently usher, but the Rekeach, the Ogur, the Yoreim, they all permit pragmatia Bitzinah. So they're severely limiting the statement of the Gemara. Just going back to the opening line of the Gemara, when Rava comes out and makes a statement, pragmatia kol shehu aser, that the slightest amount of pragmatia is aser, comes along the Ogur and the Rekeach and the Yoreim, and they say that they qualify that. When is pragmatia aser? Bifarhesia, public permit. That takes away, that's a tircha, going to the marketplace, the haggling in the marketplace. That's a tircha. But having pragmatia in the privacy of your home, that's mutter, because there's no tircha. It doesn't involve any tircha. It doesn't detract from your simchas yomtiv. That's the opinion of the Ogur, the Yoreim, and the Rekeach. So just in the footnote, so I wanted to try the cheshbon. I wanted to just sort of line up and put into perspective. They must hold that the pragmatia, we gave four reasons before why pragmatia might be usher. They must hold that pragmatia is usher because it's a mundane activity, it's a zilzal, it takes away from the spirit of yontif, and they must hold that if you're engaged in pragmatia privately, so it doesn't detract from the spirit of the aura of the Chol HaMoed, the uvda the chol is mutter as long as it's being done bitzina, and the way the Yoreim says it, it's a tircha, the reason why it's forbidden is because of tircha, and if you're engaged in the privacy of your own home, it's less exertion, and that's why it would be permitted. Obviously, if the reason why it's usher is like the Rosh said the reason why pragmatia is usher is because the buying and the selling causes distress and it takes away from the simchas yomtiv, and it can even cause a tsar because of the disappointments of the sale going through or not going through, so then it wouldn't make a difference if you're performing the transaction privately or publicly. That's why the Rosh holds that it's inherently usher, because it takes away from the simchas yomtiv, or the Magid Mishnah. The Magid Mishnah said the reason why it's usher is because you might come to perform a forbidden malacha. So it makes no difference if it's Bitzinah or Befarhesia. It's inherently usher because we're afraid that it might lead to forbidden activities in Chol HaMoed, or because it might detract from your Simchas Yomtiv because of the disappointment and the tsar. The Rekeach and the Yoreim and the Ogur, they must hold that it's merely an Isser Kal, it's a light, it's a relatively lenient prohibition, it's a relatively light prohibition that is tircha, and they say if you do it at home, there's no tircha, and it doesn't detract from the simchas yomtiv. So that's a machlekes. Now, the Beis Yosef actually says, and this is the end of paragraph Gimel, I bold the font, ule inyan halacha, this is now the Beis Yosef, nira, and this is a big kula, im revach merubahu, if an opportunity for a big profit comes up, shari bitzina. So the Beis Yosef actually gets up and says, you can rely on the opinion of the Ogur and the opinion of the Rekeach and the opinion of the Rekeach and the Ogur and the Yoreim. If an opportunity for a big profit comes along, you're allowed to. Why? Because it's immediate the Rabbanan. Because Worst case scenario, it's only an Issur Durabana. And whenever there's a suffix, Kedai Heim Hanu Rava Salisma Halehem, that these three big opinions, the Ugar and the Rekeach and the Arayim, are certainly reliable, that we can rely on them when a large profit is involved. If it's hard to give it up, there's a big temptation to earn a lot of money. So you would be allowed to rely on these opinions, the Ugar and the Urayim and the Rekeach, in order to earn the profit, to perform pragmatia, bitsina, right? Bitsina. You can't do it publicly because they agree. The Gemara says you can't do pragmatia at all. And they're limiting, they're saying the Gemara is referring to farhesia. So you certainly can't do it publicly, but bitsina, if you could manage to perform that transaction privately, if it involves a major windfall for you, you would be allowed to do it, you'd be justified in relying on these opinions. The Beis Yosef gives us permission to rely on these opinions if there's a big profit. However, there's one caveat. The Beis Yosef says, Yotzi mimenu l'simchas yamtiv yoser al masha hayibidaita l'hoitzi. On condition, he wants to be mitstarif. He wants to add another mitigating factor. If you'll take some of the profit and you'll splurge on yamtiv. So together with the fact that you're doing it bitsina, you're doing it privately, so there are those who permit it, and you'll take some of the profit and you'll splurge, even if the money doesn't come now, but at least because you know that the money's coming in, you'll splurge a little extra on the yomtif. The Beis Yosef feels comfortable allowing us to rely on these opinions. And the Ramah brings this lahalacha. So this is really lahalacha. But again, it's important to remember, and this almost, renders this heter obsolete, because the Ramah says that this heter only applies to the mekach u'memkar, only applies to the transactions, but this heter does not apply to malacha, right? Because what was the whole reason? The whole reason was because it's an isser kal. Even on Shabbos, mekach u'memkar is only derabanan, so on chol hamoed, bitsina, it's mutter. But this would only apply to the actual mekach u'memkar. It wouldn't apply to malacha. So you probably know better than I do. Would it be feasible? Imagine if there's a big opportunity to earn a lot of money on Chol HaMoed. You want to rely on the opinion of the Ugar and the Urayim and the Rekeach. The Beis Yosef allows us to. But remember, it has to be bitsina. That's one. Number two, you have to splurge a little bit on the yomtiv in order to justify doing it on the Chol HaMoed. And number three, and this is the big number three, this is not a heter for malacha. If it involves malacha, you'll have to find some other heter. This only involves the actual transaction, because the transaction is an isser kal. It's a relatively minor prohibition, even on Shabbos, and we permit you to do it on Chol HaMoed, but you can't perform malacha based on this heter just for the purpose of earning a profit. Just for the purpose of earning a profit, we only permit pragmatia bitsina privately, but we would not permit malacha on that account. So that's a big question. So someone is asking, can you type on a computer? So typing on a computer is probably not a real malacha, because it's not a permanent writing. The place can discuss that. The place can discuss like taking photographs in the old days, that the film, you know, the camera is saving the picture. It has to be developed. Not nowadays, in the old days. So these things might not be considered a malacha deraisa. So there probably would be room to be lenient to type on a keyboard, but different types of malachas would be prohibited. But it's not such a big deal. You could probably ask a non-Jew. You could probably ask a non-Jew, a shlus to shlus, to do that. But it would be tricky to really use this heter just as a heter meruvach, just as a routine heter, because inevitably there's going to be some kind of malacha involved. Okay, but this heter is out there. There's another opinion, a shita mechudeshes I have here, and Dalit, and the poskim are baffled by it, but the Ramah, at the end of Tavkuf Lamites Sif Yud Beis, writes that the minig is, you're allowed to buy, you can buy things, we're only discussing pragmatia, business, but you can buy things for personal use, even if you don't need it for the moed at all. The Ramah says that. But again, the only purchasing things almanas to sell to make money is considered pragmatia. This is the opinion of the Ramah. But to buy things for after Yom Tov, you're allowed to go shopping on Chol HaMoed to buy things for after Yom Tov. That's the Ramah. But the Mishnah Berurah brings that the Achronim say not to rely on this heter, right? So the first heter of doing pragmatia bitzina is something that we could do if it's a big profit, if you feel that it's worth it. It's better not to. That's not the, it's the mainstream opinion. It's not like that, but Beis Yosef gives us permission to rely on that as long as we don't perform malacha. The Ramah gives a blanket heter to purchase things on Chol HaMoed, even those things that are not necessary for the Yom Tov. But as we know, that's not the common custom the Mishnah Berurah brings, that the Poskim can disagree. But I wanted to just sort of balance the discussion with these heterim, with these other opinions who sort of like take a different perspective in what's permitted in Chol HaMoed. Okay, as we mentioned before, the normative halacha is that pragmatia is asur, even bitzina, under normal circumstances. That's the basic halacha. However, the Rush tells us that a davar ha'avud, if it's going to cause a loss, it's mutter. Now, what's considered causing a loss? What's considered that you're allowed to avoid a loss? So we had the example of the Gemara, where the merchandise is ready now, and if you don't pick it up now, it's questionable if you'll ever get it. So that's obviously a davar ha'avud, because Ravina laid out the money already, and if he's not going to get the merchandise, clearly that's a davar ha'avud. So he'd be allowed to get the merchandise. You could even perform malacha for a davar ha'avud. So the Rush gives us other examples and qualifies what would another example of a davar ha'avud be. Says the Rush, "Beloy mikri davar ha'avud, it's only considered a davar ha'avud. It's only considered avoiding a loss. El sheyechzer min akeret, if you'll lose the principal." So you purchased merchandise and the price is about to plummet, or you have some kind of inside knowledge and your stocks, you know, you're gambling and you're saying to yourself, I think that the stock market's going to crash. So you want to sell your stocks because you're going to lose your principal. You're going to lose your keren. And he gives us some examples in the Gemara. Tuchlani, there was some sort of dates that you wanted to press them to get the juice out. Otherwise, they would spoil. So that's an example where your merchandise will get ruined if you don't sell it now, or if you don't engage in malacha now. Or another example, Zesav, that should be his olives. We had this last week in one of the examples we came across. Your olives were already rolled, which they need to be pressed. Or your wine was already in the bar. You already pressed the grapes and produced the wine. And now you want to bottle and seal the wine. Okigoyin hanin de b'nei akor de shanvasa. Or like the people in the story of the Gemara, where Avinu wanted to pick up the merchandise. She'im lo yelech atav, he doesn't go now. He's going to lose. He's not going to find them after the Moed and he'll lose the merchandise altogether. So these are clearly cases of Yom HaAvod. Either you'll lose the merchandise because they're going to disappear, the merchants are going to disappear, or you have merchandise in stock and the merchandise will either spoil, so you'd be allowed to perform halacha, or clearly you'd be allowed to sell the merchandise to avoid the merchandise spoiling. Or the other example, that the price is going to crash, you're going to lose the keren if you don't sell it now. For example, the season is almost over. If you don't sell out your merchandise now while the going is good, the merchandise will be out of season and the price will plummet and you'll lose the keren. Those are examples of davar ha'avod. However, says the Rush, avol im yom hashuk hu b'moed. Let's say there's a weekly yom hashuk. There's a weekly market day when that's the best time to sell the goods. If you don't sell it this week, you can always sell it next week. You're not going to lose out in the long run. Yom hashuk hu b'moed, v'yuchel at the linkos chirasa b'revach, you would be able to sell your merchandise with a big profit. And after the moed, you're not going to have the same profit, but you're not going to lose the keren. So it's usher. It's usher to sell. That's the Rush's opinion. You would not be allowed to sell because you're not going to lose your profit. So it's easier to sell now in Chol HaMoed. It just happens to be that there's a Yom HaShuk, there's a bazaar that's going on, there's some sort of a market day that's going on. So if I sell my merchandise now, I'll be able to fetch a higher price. After the Moed, it won't be so conducive, but you'll still be able to sell it. You won't be able to get the same price that you can fetch today, but you still will be able to get it. you're not going to lose the keren. You're not going to have a loss in your actual principal. So that would be forbidden to sell, right? And as we mentioned earlier, this is talking about a market day situation. So even the Urayim and the Rekeach and the Arga would agree that this is the classical case of the Gemara, that you can't engage in commerce publicly, for sure, right? The Rush holds you can't even engage in commerce privately. So just because you're giving up an opportunity to make more money, but you're not going to lose from the keren, if you don't sell it today, you'll sell it tomorrow, and tomorrow you won't fetch as good a price, but you'll be able to sell it and you'll be able to earn a profit. You're not going to suffer a loss in the principal in what you laid out. That would be forbidden. So this is called menias revach. This is called merely forfeiting a profit. Forfeiting a profit, that does not justify having mekach or memkor and chol hamoed. Only avoiding a loss, but menias revach not. The Rush quotes the Yushalmi, if you know that if you don't sell it, you'll lose the principal, then you can sell it. However, if it's just minyas revach, if we're just losing out on profit, we're not losing on principal, so then you would not be allowed to sell. Now the Rush gives us a very interesting heter. The Rush says like this, if you don't have what to eat, then obviously you're allowed to engage in pragmatia chamed. You even will be allowed to do malacha if you don't have what to eat. Now the Rush goes on. That will be obvious. Now the Rush goes on. Afilu yesh loy ma yoychal. Even if the person has what to eat, ele im yimkor yeh loy mois b'revach, if the person would engage in commerce, he would have more money and he would feel more comfortable to splurge on the yomtif. So says the Rush, mashma b'yushalmi that it's mutter. So the Yushalmi, this is not brought in the Bavli, but the Yushalmi says that if you want to earn profit, so we're discussing pragmatia, which would normally be forbidden because it's just about the profit. You're not going to suffer any loss if you refrain from pragmatia. But the reason why you want to engage in pragmatia is to have more money, more cash flow, that you'll feel more comfortable to splurge on the yomtif, then you would be allowed to engage in pragmatia. And the Rush gives us, he cites the Yushalmi. It says in the Yushalmi, Perek Beis, the Mechilton, and Moi Katan, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Lazar, have a mafkidin, Rabbi Oishia, to have a parish. They saw that Rabbi Oishia was abstaining from halacha. Parish belimkor b'moi. He was not selling on chol hamoed. So they told him, they told him, I at yoda de'at mizdavin de'at shosi gabon, if you realize that if you would sell, then you would have enough money to buy that wine that you always wanted to drink and you'd be able to enjoy Yom Tov with us, ve'iloy, and if not, then sell. Ve'iloy, but if not, loy tazman. So the Yushalmi clearly says that if by selling something on Chol HaMoed, you'll be able to purchase that favorite wine in honor of the Yom Tov, then go ahead and sell in order to procure the cash to be able to splurge on the Yom Tov. Another example, Rabbi Yoina Havale Safran. Rabbi Yoina had Sfarim. Asa Shoa L'Rav Huna. He asked Rav Huna, Ma'ol Mizbinu, can I sell them on Chol HaMoed? Omer Lei. So Rav Huna answered this Rabbi Yoina, Shari, Meichid Ad B'Moyada. You'll enjoy the Yom Tov. Yat Shasi Kunditin B'Moyada. And you'll drink that fine wine, that sweet wine that you always wanted to enjoy. So if we allow you to do Pragmatia, you'll splurge on the Yom Tov and you'll enjoy the Yom Tov, then it's Mutter. So the Rush summarizes, the Rush concludes that it would be mutter to sell in order to enjoy the Yom Tov better, the kunditin, the sweet wine, the good wine, and provided that until now your money is not as tight, and if we allow you to sell, you'll be able to have more money and you'll feel more comfortable to splurge on the Yom Tov. So, by the way, I want to just digress. I want to just clarify something that we mentioned earlier. So, we mentioned earlier the opinion of the Ogur and the Urayim and the Rekeach, that in their opinion, the entire prohibition of pragmatia is only if it's beferhesia, if it's public. But if it's done privately, it's mutter. The Beis Yosef says that most opinions disagree, but if a big opportunity presents itself, then you can rely on these opinions and you can sell bitzina. Says the Beis Yosef, as long as you take some of the money and splurge on the Yom Tov. So the Mishnah Berurah clarifies that what's the Beis Yosef saying? If you're going to take the money and splurge, then it would be mutter anyway. It would be mutter even before Hesia. So what's the Beis Yosef saying? So the Mishnah Berurah clarifies, normally we only allow you to engage in forbidden pragmatia, so to speak, if you need the money and if the extra money will help you splurge on the yomtiv. But if you honestly have enough money to be able to splurge on the yomtiv, and you don't really need the pragmatia to enable you to enjoy the yomtiv, then it's forbidden. What the Beis Yosef was permitting earlier was to rely on these minority opinions to perform business bitzina, and it was just like a heter to use some of the money for yomtiv. But that you would not, that example back then would not have been the ordinary heter of using money, because normally that's when you really need the money. If you really need the income in order to feel good enough to spend the money on the yomtiv, then you can do it even before Hesia. The heter before that we were giving was even to the person who doesn't need the money, he's relying on the minority opinions that he's allowed to perform the pragmatia bitzina. What we're discussing now is even according to the normative opinion that you're never allowed to do pragmatia, even bitzina, but if it'll make a difference that now you'll legitimately have more money to spend, then everybody would agree, based on this Yerushalmi, that you're allowed to engage in pragmatia in order to enjoy the yomtiv. Now, I wanted to sort of clarify this, that the heterim that we just gave per pragmatia, one heter was davara avud, that you'll lose the principal. The second heter was in order to have enough money to be able to enjoy the yomtiv and to splurge on the yomtiv. These two heterim are the normal, ordinary heterim that would even permit malacha. This is not something unique to pragmatia. This is something that would even permit malacha, because davar ha'avud, we spoke about last week, permits malacha on halamoid, even bona fide malacha, not just pragmatia. And the second heter, that it'll enable you to spend more freely on the yomtiv, that's a tzorech hamoyed. So that would also permit malacha. A tzorech hamoyed would permit malacha. So these two heterim that we just mentioned, in order to avoid a loss and in order to have enough money to splurge on the yomtiv, these heterim would apply even to malacha, right? So just again, always to make this distinction, are we discussing the pure pragmatia, or are we even discussing the associated malachas? So these heterim would permit you even to perform malacha. The reason why I'm doing the pragmatia is to avoid a loss. So we know that to avoid a loss, you can even perform malacha. If the reason why you're performing pragmatia is because it's a tzarech hamoyed, because you'll be able to enjoy the yantif and spend the money, this heter would even allow you to do malacha. Okay. Now, item ches in the notes is an exceptional heter. There's an exceptional heter in the name of the Yerushalmi. If on the chalamoed, a davar she'enu matzui, an uncommon, once-in-a-lifetime kind of windfall. So there's going to be a yom hashok, there's going to be some sort of convention, there's going to be some sort of opportunity to show your wares, to be able to make a profit. And this is something that's not matzui, it's uncommon. You don't think this opportunity will present itself again in the future. Maybe, you know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Maybe such an opportunity will come up again in a couple of years from now. But basically, this is what every business like banks on, that you're going to have these once-in-a-lifetime opportunities to get ahead, to be competitive. It's a davar she'enu matzui. So says the Yerushalmi, and this is like an exceptional heter, that itself could be considered a davara avod. Now, this is a big chiddush, because normally we say that forfeiting a profit, an opportunity for profit, if you're not going to lose the keren, you're not losing what you laid out. You're not losing the keren. You're just being meineya from a revach. It's just forfeiting an opportunity for profit. Normally, it's not a davara avod. But if it's a once in a lifetime, a very Davrish in Mutzi, it's an opportunity that doesn't come around so often. So the missed opportunity itself could be considered a davara avod. The way I understand it is because, like every business, it basically is waiting for these kinds of opportunities, right? The daily routine, the day in and day out, that's basically what just helps you pay your bills and you basically etch out a living. But the way what really makes the business worthwhile are these once in a lifetime opportunities, these once in a while opportunities that have to present themselves where you can get a big profit. So this is something that's called the davar ha'avad. The fact that the business relies on these opportunities, giving up that opportunity is itself considered a davar ha'avad. This is not a simple example of giving up a profit. This is what makes the business worthwhile in the first place. So if I give up this opportunity, it's almost like you're not in the game. So that is considered a davar ha'avad. Giving up this opportunity itself would be considered a davar ha'avad, even though it's ultimately just a question of profit. What's the example? That there are shayaris, there are caravans of merchandise that's coming, and there's so much business. They're selling it cheaply. They want to go back. The merchant ships, the ships, they want. It's a going out of business sale, right? It's a going out of business sale. They want to sail back to Europe. They want to get rid of all of their merchandise. They want to sell everything. They're selling it cheaply. So this is not something that's going to present itself another time. You're not going to find such a thing after the Moed. Or conversely, these shayaris, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. They're buying up. You know, the government is giving out a government contract, or the king is coming. He wants a contract, and if you get the contract, you'll make a ton of money. So this is a once in a lifetime opportunity that would be considered. Asking you to give up this opportunity is itself considered a davar ha'avad. And you'd be allowed to buy at a tremendous gain, or you'd be allowed to sell at a tremendous gain, even though ultimately all that's involved is profit. But giving up an opportunity, that would be too much to expect. That itself will be considered a davar ha'avad. And they permitted the pragmatia, kivin de davar she'enu matzuhu, right? So this is a major heter that the regular day in and day out, that's the kind of transactions that we prohibit, because that's just about not making that week's income. That's what Chol HaMoed is all about. The Chachamim wanted us to take off that week and enjoy the Yom Tov. And the regular day in and day out of operating your store, that's something that we're asked to give up for Chol HaMoed in honor of the Yom Tov. Just like we close our businesses for Shabbos and Yom Tov, we close our business on Chol HaMoed. But if an opportunity to make a big windfall, which really is what keeps the business in the sustainable or keeps it in the game, asking the person to give up.
We have a Pesach program, and I've been running for many years.
Yeah.
We have someone who comes in with a room who sells hats.
Yeah.
To like 500 women who are like, she makes enough for during that Olamai, keep her going for months afterwards.
Right.
You wouldn't have this opportunity without it.
If you would give up that opportunity, it's a once a year opportunity. It's now or never. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you, Jay. That would be a good example. So this was an example of where it's an opportunity to make a profit that doesn't present itself normally. So the Yishalmi says that such a thing would be mutter. Okay. now we're gonna qualify this. The Gemara says in Daf Yud Aleph, there's a story. That Bidisa Liboy, the river of the city of Liboy, there was a river in the city of Liboy, and somehow the river overflowed and Kavri, and there was a free for all. There was a whole thing of fish that were there. Maybe the water overflowed and it went like into a little cistern or something. And there's all sorts of fish that normally would be very expensive, and now it's as if the river dumped all of this free fish. And everybody's running to get the fish. So this was an opportunity that presented itself on Chol HaMoed. So Rava said like this. Rava permitted the townspeople to go and salt and preserve the fish. So Omale Abaye says to Rava, how can you permit them to catch these fish or to collect these fish and then preserve it for after Chol HaMoed? Didn't we learn in the Mishnah? Kivashim shehu yochal lechel b'moed kaifshon. You're only allowed to pickle the fish or the vegetables if you be able to eat them on Yom Tov. But you can't pickle things deliberately for after Yom Tov. So Rabbi said like this, Omalei, kivun de me'ikara adaita da achilu aisinu. Because the people were running to catch this fish for Yom Tov, So it's very important to listen carefully to what to Rava's explanation. I'm only permitting the people to catch this fish or to collect this fish for yontif use. So they're allowed to liberally collect fish as long as they can reasonably claim that they're going to use this fish for yontif. When I told them that they're allowed to pickle and to preserve the fish for after yontif, because after they already collected it for the purpose of yontif, they're allowed to pickle the leftovers. Why? Because now they own all of this fish. Initially, they bought the fish. Initially, so to speak, they collected the fish for yontif. Maybe they collected the fish more liberally because it was free fish. But they collected the fish presumably for yontif. Now, if there are leftovers, they don't have to let it spoil. They're allowed to salt it. They're allowed to pickle it, preserve it for after yomtiv, because it's pragmatia ha'avadami. It's as if you'll lose the carrot, because you went to collect the fish for the purpose of yomtiv. Beheter. Now the fish is rightfully yours. You had the right to acquire the fish because you acquired it for yomtiv use. Now you realize you have extra. You don't have to let it go to waste. You're allowed to preserve it because now it's to avoid a loss, because you legitimately were kinda, you acquired the fish, and now you're salting it merely to avoid a loss. That was Rava's permit, and that was Rava's rationale. I did not permit them to collect as much fish as they can and preserve it for after yomtiv. I never would have permitted such a thing. I only permitted them to collect the fish that they could reasonably claim they were using for yomtiv. Anything left over, they're allowed to preserve, because otherwise that would be considered a loss of principle because it's already there as a heter. That's what Rav is saying. So the obvious question, I'm sure you're all thinking of the question. The Ravid asks the obvious question. How does this Gemara in the Bavli, how is this consistent with what we just said from the Yerushalmi, the Rosh Paskin based on the Yerushalmi, that if there's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, you're allowed to go to the fair and buy, because the ships, they want to unload, they want to sell, it's a going out of business sale, they want to sell things at a very cheap, a third of the price, and you want to buy it up because this is a lost opportunity, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, so you're allowed to do that based on the Yerushalmi. So if that's the case, why is that any different than collecting this free fish? Why did Rava only permit them to preserve the fish afterwards? He only permitted them to collect as much fish as they reasonably think they can use for yomtiv, and only the leftovers they can preserve for after yomtiv. Why didn't Rava give them a blanket heter to collect as much fish as they can? Every man for himself, go run and collect as much fish as you can. It's like a grab fest. Take as much fish as you can and preserve it for after yomtiv, because it's like the shayara, it's like the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Free fish. Why didn't Rava permit it? Why is Rava only permitting them to first assess what they need for yomtiv, and if there's anything left over, only then is it considered a davar oved? But he didn't let them collect the fish based on the fact that it's a one-time opportunity. How is this consistent with Yerushalmi? So the Ravid gives two very insightful answers. The first answer is almost like an insight in human psychology, and it really explains the whole heter. And the second answer that the Ravid gives is something that's brought l'halacha. The first answer is that there's a big difference when you're running a business and a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity presents itself where your whole year relies on that, where that's what really makes the business worthwhile. Because that's a davara of it. You're sitting there sweating away in the business, you're running a business, and finally that break that you were waiting for comes around and you're asking me to give it up. That's considered a davara of it, because that's the whole reason why I'm in business. I'm waiting for these opportunities. That's the whole reason why I'm in business. That would be considered a davar avad, simply giving up the opportunity. But in Rava's case, in the Bavli, free fish. You're not running a business. That's just free fish. Imagine if there wouldn't have been free fish. So then you wouldn't have the fish, right? This is not something that you're waiting for. You're not banking on this. This is not what makes your business sustainable, viable. This is just free fish. It was a mitzia. So the Ravid says that there's a big difference between a mitzia, something that nobody was expecting, something that you're not relying on, something that's not your parnasa. This is a pure windfall. This is pure profit that that you didn't expect, you weren't waiting for. This is something that you are not allowed to acquire to do malacha for on Chol HaMoed. It's only, that's why Rava permitted them to collect what they need for Moed, and only then they can preserve the leftovers. But you can't just go and grab handfuls and handfuls of free fish, because that's profit. That's pure profit. Masha Ein Kein the Yushalmi is talking about a business opportunity that every business is ultimately relying on. That's your job, that's your parnasa, and finally the break that you're waiting for comes around. Giving that up would be considered a davar of it. It's like a psychological difference. It's a very important difference. It's not black and white. It's not that profit is sometimes considered a davar of it and sometimes not. If it's pure profit, unexpected profit, that's not a davar of it. Giving up that, sorry, you can't avail yourself of the free fish. It's Chol HaMoed. Go back home, enjoy Chol HaMoed with your family. Don't go out looking for metzius. That's not the way to spend Chol HaMoed. But if you're running a business and this is a one-time opportunity to make your business viable, that giving that up is considered a davar of it, because this is something that you sort of rely on. That's the first reason of the Ravid. The second answer the Ravid gives, and this is brought lahalacha, that, and again, this brings us back to what we were saying before. We're only permitting a one-time opportunity for pragmatia because we're considering it a davara avod only when it doesn't involve malacha. And the Ravid says because mekech omemper, like we said earlier, is not a malacha, and arguably it's not considered a tircha. It's a one-time opportunity. But catching all this fish and salting and preserving the fish is considered like a malacha, and there's tircha, and that we don't permit. So the Ravid brings the Rush, he brings the Yushalmi that the Rush brings, he brings the heter of the Yushalmi, that you're allowed to avail yourself of the one-time business opportunity, because even though it involves profit, giving up this opportunity is a davara avod, but it's a quasi-davara avod. It's not a real davara avod. You're not going to lose principle. This is not like watering your field because otherwise your crops will die. This is not a real davara avod. We're loosely categorizing giving up the one opportunity as a davara avod, but it's a quasi davara avod. So this would not permit malacha, says the Ravid. In the case of the fish, Rava was not willing to permit them to go out and catch all that fish and salt all that fish just because it's a profit. Because you can't do malacha for profit. That's not a davara avod. The Yushalmi was strictly permitting pragmatia, which is not malacha. It's just an iser kal, like we said before, in the name of the Ugar. So this distinction, this important distinction, keeps on presenting itself. So the Beis Yosef earlier in our discussion, he allowed us to rely on the iter, the Ugar, and the Rekeach, and the Urayim, to perform pragmatia bitzina, but only if it doesn't involve malacha. The Yerushalmi is permitting us to avail ourselves of the one-time business, the once-in-a-lifetime business opportunity, but again, it's a quasi-davara avod. It's based on davara avod, but it's a quasi-davara avod, because ultimately it's only a profit. There's no real loss here. So says the Ravid, and this is brought lahalacha, we only permit mekach u'memkar, pure transaction, but not malacha. So just like to come up with an example, so Jay, your example before, so we'll sell all the hats and all these opportunities that come up, but we're not going to record the transactions. You know, we'll issue the receipts and we'll record the transactions after Chol HaMoed. Everybody, please remember how much you spent and all that. And we're only going to record the transaction after. That's what the Ravid would say, that this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for profit is only allows transactions, pure transactions, but not malacha. Okay, and this is brought in the Poskim, in item Yud. This is brought in the Poskim, the Bir Halacha, that purchasing things very cheaply, or it wouldn't be found after the Chol HaMoed, is only mutter if no malacha is involved, like the second teretz of the Ravid. So it's important to be aware of this and to look out for this. Okay, I wanted to conclude now with realizing, acknowledging the reality of today's day and age, that not everybody has the ability to close their businesses or to not go to work on Chol HaMoed. So the Poskim, they try to be Dan Lekav Schus or they try to be mizaka the rabbim. They try to be to defend the common practice of going to work on Chol HaMoed with the following different ideas. So it goes without saying that if a person's going to lose his job if he doesn't show up on Chol HaMoed, then you're allowed to, because that's a davar avad. So that goes without saying that if your employer says to you, if you don't show up the whole week of Chol HaMoed, don't bother coming back, you'd be allowed to go on Chol HaMoed. That goes without saying. So in item Yud Aleph, so I noted in the name of the Poskim that there are Ksheir Mushlemim, there are perfectly good, righteous people who work in an office on Chol HaMoed or a store on Chol HaMoed, and we have to be Malamet Tzchus for them. We have to try to justify how they're doing it. It's not so easy to just take a week off. Not everyone can do that. So the Bir Halacha brings from an Eliyahu Rabbah that we're basically trying to come up with justifications for people who feel they have to work on Chol HaMoed. One justification would be because maybe if I close my office, if I close my store or my case, I'm going to lose out on business and my customers will go elsewhere. So you have to know if this is really a concern. You know how sometimes you send an email and then you immediately get a reply that I'm out of office, right? So does that cause the customers to go elsewhere and you permanently lose those customers? Even if you have a customer who frequents your store or frequents your services, if you tell him you're not available this week, can we make something up for next week, is that going to cause him to permanently go elsewhere and never come back to you? Is that a davar avad? So if you feel that's the case, the Eliyahu Rabbah says that would be considered a davar avad. If you're afraid, not that you're just giving up profit for the week, but if you're legitimately afraid that you're going to permanently lose customers and your competitors are going to get ahead permanently, so that could be considered losing principal, and then that would permit Chol HaMoed. However, the Eliyahu Rabbah, again, this distinction keeps on coming up. The Eliyahu Rabbah says that it's harder to use this justification to permit real malacha, right? Again, this keeps on coming up. This is similar to the Yushalmi, that it's a quasi davra of it. So we would permit transactions, but the Eliyahu Rabbah, who's the one who presents this heter, he doesn't feel comfortable, confident enough to rely on this heter even to perform bona fide malacha. This is where the Mishnah Berurah brought up that we can't really, practically speaking, we can't rely on this Eliyahu Rabbah if you're running a textile business, for example, where you're going to be cutting the materials or sewing or who knows what, which should bona fide malachas. So this is a limud zchus. Maybe the person will permanently lose business and he'll fall behind in the competition, but you have to introspect if it's really true. Are you really going to lose permanent business? Of course you're not going to make profit this week, but that's what the Chachamim are asking us to do. They're asking us to give up profit this week in honor of the Yontif. But will you permanently lose out customers? So if the answer is yes, then that's a justification. If the answer is not really, so then it's not so simple. And the Eliyahu Rabbah is not happy with this heter to do bona fide malacha. Okay. There's another heter, an item Yud Beis, that we mentioned this before, that if it'll help you spend more money and splurge on the Yomtif. And the Taz says, and this is something that we probably can all relate to, the Taz, the Turei Zav says, that unless you're fabulously wealthy, we're all ultimately struggling. You know how I once heard a joke, somebody said, if I would buy a lottery ticket for $1, and I would win $1 million, so I would be $1 poorer than I was before. Because the extra $1 million, all it means is that your taxes go up, your insurance goes up, your tuition goes up. So we're all struggling, and we all sort of live hand to mouth. So says the Taz, unless you're fabulously wealthy, arguably everybody needs to work and have a steady income in order to feel comfortable to splurge on the Yomtif. So the Taz is sort of like giving a blanket heter that people could work on Chol HaMoed because we're all eligible for the heter of earning money on Chol HaMoed for the purpose of being able to splurge on the Yomtif. However, even the Taz agrees that if you really are able to make it through the week comfortably and take off for the week, then you should not. And again, this is something where we have to introspect, because people do take off vacations, people do take off a week here and a week there, and people don't think twice about it. So all of a sudden, when it comes to Chol HaMoed, all of a sudden we feel stressed out, and we feel like we can't afford a week off of work. So we have to be honest with ourselves. But that's another heter that's there. Here is another heter in item Yud Gimel, which I think is, in my mind, this is like the most justifiable. I think that this is the this heter here is the heter that resonates the most, at least with me. That when a person has a business, there's a lot of overhead, and the person has to pay rent, the person has to pay his workers, the person has to pay his insurance, whatever it is. There are constant chayvos that the person has, overhead that are associated with the business. So if you're busy laying out all this money and you're not bringing in an income to cover, so arguably that itself could be considered a davar ha'avad. It's not like we're not living in a shtetl where you have your little store on the corner where you sell your eggs and you sell your sugar and there's no overhead, right? Nowadays, people are running a store, they're running a business, they have to pay the business insurance, they have to pay the expenses, the overhead, the rent, the storefront, the workers, whatever it is. There's a whole payroll system in the business. And if you're not earning money, that could be considered a davar ha'avad. Interestingly enough, the Sha'arei Tshuva in the beginning of Tavkuf Lamed Tes doesn't go for this heter, because he looks at it like it's two separate things. These are chovos that you took upon yourself, and earning money is earning money. It's two separate things. Just because you have expenses, it doesn't just turn everything into a davar ha'avad. The expenses are one thing, and the income is something else. The profit is something else. So the Sha'arei Tshuva actually does not look at it as if earning money is in order to avoid a loss. He doesn't look at it like that. He looks at it like the chayvos that you took upon yourself are chayvos, and the income that you're trying to generate is income. However, the Chazon Ish, I saw brought down, does agree with this svara, and if the expenses of maintaining a business are so high that you can argue that closing the business for a week is a davar ha'avad, then that would justify running the business on Chol HaMoed. You know how the airlines, if the flights are canceled for a week, the whole airline already goes out of business because the billions of dollars of outlay that they have to be churning in that income, otherwise the whole business goes down the drain. So theoretically, you can consider that a davar ha'avad also. But again, we have to be honest and sincere with ourselves. The Poskim say, and this is in conclusion, item Yud Dalet, they remind us of the story that we brought in the beginning of the discussion, that Ravina had a heter to sell the merchandise for 6,000, and in honor of the yomtiv, he postponed the transaction till after, and he was awarded that it came up that he sold it for 12,000. So the Chachamim remind us that all of these heterim are things that are out there that we can use, but the more we honor the yomtiv, that's what it's all about, easier said than done, the more we honor the yomtiv, the more blessing we bring into our lives. Okay, Yasha Koyach, everybody. I'm going to run down to Myriv.
This conference is no longer being recorded.
Thank you.